This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. You drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy. High noon in the District of Columbia, and I'm fired up to get to the Rude Guest Hotline to talk to our boy, Thor Nystrom. Thor, I want to start here. I know you work your ass off around the NFL draft for months and months leading up to it, and then I can only imagine what that week and weekend is like for you. Have you gotten any sleep, buddy?
Hey guys, how you doing? I've gotten a little bit. I'm trying to catch up. It's going to take a couple of weeks, but we've gotten a little bit.
I like to hear it. Let's start with the biggest story in the draft before we get to Washington. B and I have talked about this like kind of on our own, not really even on the air. Cam Ward goes one. The Jags trade up for Travis Hunter two. It's kind of interesting, but I get it. But the biggest story in this draft was dominated by Shedeur Sanders, yeah, and his slide. I believe you had Shedeur number one on your board. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, well, I had him as QB1. I think I had him 8 or 9 overall, okay, one spot QB1 over Cam Ward. Yeah, and just in terms of the on-field evaluation, that's where I was at with it. He clearly had a poor interview process. NFL teams said he thought he was going to come in with a bigger attitude, and I'm going to run things, and I'm going to turn around the culture here. And they obviously, you know, between the trepidations about that, and maybe they didn't see his game quite as high as like myself or Mel Kiper, a couple of the other people out there. And then you see the way that manifests. Even Cleveland said, you know, that they would have, you know, had him higher, but then it was just like he was falling down the board. And the weird stuff going on with that, with the trepidation of that. But I think at the end of the day, he did find a good landing spot. You know, Andrew Berry mentioned that at a certain point, it just became, you know, the price point that you could get him at, it became a no-brainer. And I tend to think that he's got a real shot to win a job as a rookie, like not on the roster, but as the starting quarterback. He certainly is the most talented of the four that is currently in that room. So hopefully he shows up with, humility as opposed to defiance and gives himself a shot.
You know, I hear that all the time about the humility. I understand the humility thing, but why is it a problem for someone to believe in themselves?
I don't think it is. Obviously I did not share the trepidation that the NFL did. And, you know, some of that, you have this unique circumstance where obviously his father and everything his father says, it gets amplified in the media, and that probably amplified the trepidation about it. But yeah, I don't see that as a problem at all. The one where it's been evoked to is with Archie Manning and Eli Manning and Archie. Yeah. Him stepping in and saying Eli's not going to play these certain places. To me, yeah. Is there a double standard there? Absolutely. And was it unprecedented, that fall of Shedeur, where it doesn't have to do with a legitimate off-field concern? It doesn't have to do with durability concerns? It didn't have anything to do with this or that. It was sort of this public discourse and fear about that once you got inside the building. So, yeah, I thought it was absurd.
Yeah. I think you can make an argument he wasn't a first-round prospect and the hype got way too overblown. And then he hurt himself, but eventually this thing was bananas. And I think, like, I'm trying to stick to the football of all this. I think the Browns will screw it up because they're the Browns, but I think the Browns got an absolute steal in the fifth round with Shedeur Sanders. Like, when he didn't go Friday night, I said on the podcast I recorded that night, I was like, somebody's getting an absolute steal of value of the player. Because just watch the games and remove everything else. He was good in the games.
Yeah, that's right. And speaking to that, Sanders, 81.8% adjusted accuracy percentage. That was last year. That was 5 points ahead of Cam Ward. And it was number two amongst all FBS quarterbacks. Also 97 percentile avoiding negative throws per dropback, despite playing behind one of the most rancid offensive lines you'll see in the Power Four. He was also number three in turnover worthy play rate, the lowest, you know, as far as qualifying FBS quarterbacks. It's a guy with elite accuracy and placement who takes care of the ball. right? It's a chain-moving guy who will take care of the ball. That game translates, right? The personality stuff, we'll see about that. The NFL seemed to be making a loud statement about their perception of that. We're going to find out if they're right or not. But, yeah, great situation in Cleveland for Shadir.
Okay. I think Will Howard landed in a really good situation. I don't know that he's good enough to win that job, but if he is, I think that's fascinating. Mason Rudolph is not very good.
Yeah, it's funny. My comp for Will Howard was Mason Rudolph
in the pre-draft process.
So pretty funny that ended up that way. But yeah, it's going to be kind of interesting. But you're totally right. I mean, Pittsburgh probably the only team who has a worse quarterback room than the Browns. So yeah, you definitely have an opportunity there. You're Will Howard.
All right, talking with our friend Thor Nystrom here, draft analyst. You can give him a follow at ThorKU. He joins us via the Rude Guest Hotline. Let's get into Washington's draft. So it's funny. I saw your report card. I think it was a C plus maybe. But
C plus. Yeah.
I also read your thoughts. Overall, this class, it seemed like you liked every player, just that they only had five picks. Was that kind of the issue?
Yeah, in some ways, like my methodology is based heavily on ROI. And I know for the regular sort of draft writer, it seems like C plus would be like their lowest grade. It's actually an above average grade for me. You know, I do it over the curve. So C plus is literally above average. They would have been 13th or 14th, you know, when I ranked them out like that. I did like their class. I thought there were some interesting decisions. You know, we had talked in the spring, JP, heading up to this thing about, you know, the idea that the edges that they could be targeting in round one, those two-way guys, Shamar Stewart and Michael Williams, the ones we talked about most, they were long gone by that point. Long gone. And it turns out they never had access to him, even shouting distance. And you end up going with the offensive tackle right before the offensive tackle class just totally dropped off a shelf. So I was good with that. You know, the offensive tackle class wasn't great outside the top. And then you had Simmons, you had Connerly that were hanging out there. And then obviously they got plucked before the end of the first round. Now you can kick Brandon Coleman inside. So I thought that was well done. I like the next round stopping Trey Amos' slide. I was a little bit lower than Trey Amos than some in the media. I still had him 43, right? I mean, the idea that you could get that guy at the end of the second round, I thought was really well done. And then the day three guys, I more or less liked all those guys too, right? Jalen Lane, his athletic profile is most similar to Tyreek Hill in the NFL. So pretty interesting there as well.
Yeah, I always say you pick him up and put him down. He can run. He had a hell of a 40-inch vertical, and he can return punts. That's what I like.
And I think he can play.
Yeah, that's
think he could be the punt returner the this
slot.
Year.
Yeah, I think he is your punt returner. I also think he could play in the slot. I think for Washington specifically, I think Jalen Lane kind of solves two problems because they couldn't trust OZ to return punts, so Crowder got that work. They had to bring Crowder back to the active roster. And then Diami was kind of this vertical threat for them. Mm-hmm. I think Lane is now your punt returner and your vertical threat. We'll see if he can really emerge as a receiver as a rookie, but I don't know. I'm more bullish about that pick than I expected. Also, Thor, I'm curious if you saw this. When they took Lane, if you go back and look, there were like five edge guys that went about between 3 and 10 picks before Washington. And I think, so they take Jalen Lane at 128. Just go back and look. Kyle Kennard, who they had in for a top 30, went 125 edge guy. Baron Sorrell went 124 edge guy out of Texas. Jack Sawyer, edge guy out of Ohio State, went 123. And David Walker, edge guy out of Central Arkansas, who I believe they also had for a visit, went 121. Do you think if any of those guys get to Washington, that's who they're taking instead?
It's a great point. Yeah, you had that edge run right in front of them, and that absolutely could have been the case, right? Like, and then those four guys go off the board. You go with Jalen Lane. I think your theory on that might be true. It'd be fascinating to know.
What do you make of? You might know more about this story than I do. How badly did the NCAA screw this seventh round running back, JCM?
Bad, really bad. You know, especially in this era where everyone gets the waiver, you know, the eligibility waiver, and they let him play in one game. And I don't know how much you've looked into it. It was a thing that had to do with two players having the same jersey number And then the NCAA couldn't figure it out. And so then they were like, oh, we're looking into your eligibility, but you have to be on the shelf now. And they just never really got back to it. So his entire senior season, or his last season, was wiped away at Arizona, essentially because of a clerical mistake. I might have been in the courtroom with the NCAA if I was Kroski Merritt, but like, it happened so quick. Again, he goes through camp, he plays the first game, and then it crops up. The NCAA, we talked for years about all the issues there. This was one where they isolated a kid to do wrong by him.
It's just bizarre. What do you think of him as a player, though? Because for a lot of fans, they can't look at what he did.
They can't look it up.
They can't look. Last season, he didn't do anything. So tell them what they got.
Yeah, it's a player who definitely would have been drafted higher had the NCAA not done that to him. I really like the feel with him. I really like his agility. Really, really hard cuts. And he can string them together, too. It's like a make-you-miss kind of a guy. What we didn't get to see with him in college, and I'm pretty fascinated to know, like, in a sliding doors reality, the NCAA doesn't screw the kid. At Arizona this past year, would they have used him more in the passing game? They needed a complimentary guy to Tetterell McMillan, who obviously is an all-world stud. Would Kroski Merritt have gotten more work there? We didn't get to see Kroski Merritt as a receiver at New Mexico. I mean, they don't really throw the ball anyway, but that's not how they use their running backs, even on the limited passing concepts that they do. Would have been fascinated to see that, but we have a black box as far as his pass game works, pass game goes, because of that, right? But as far as the instincts as a runner, the ability to make people miss, the elusiveness, I really, really like that. And I think you're talking more fourth, fifth rounder if he had gotten to play this past season. And if he had gone nuclear and they were using him in the passing game, he was showing effectiveness, he would have had a shot at round three as well, I believe.
Well, we always worry about the wear and tear of a guy. Maybe they got somebody that don't have that extra wear and tear on them.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, we'll just see how quickly he bounces back. You know, it used to be in the NFL, if you missed the last season, they were really punitive with you. I mean, you guys remember like Maurice Claret and Mike Williams and stuff like that. That has become less so. You know, after the COVID season, there were several players that opted out of that season, and then they were really high picks, Ja'Marr Chase being one of them. So I don't think the NFL abused that with quite as much trepidation. But to your guys' point, if you were able to put that film out there last year against the Power Four, again, prior to that, you're at New Mexico, if you've been able to do that and your game had grown a little bit in addition to that, you're definitely going way higher than you just got picked.
Talking with our boy Thor Nystrom here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can give Thor a follow at ThorKU. NBA Fantasy Life draft analyst, does a hell of a job. I seriously, if you're into this stuff, I would follow Thor. Dude, so I also know this. I know you're from Minnesota. You, deep down in your heart, obviously you're an analyst now. You're looking at everything, but I know you bleed purple, the Vikings. I know how excited you are for J.J. McCarthy. And they just traded for Sam Howell to be his backup. That, to me, says Kevin O'Connell believes J.J. is going to be healthy and ready to rock. Because that's not a veteran to compete with J.J. or if they're concerned. That is a backup. Am I reading that right?
1,000%. Yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers was throwing himself at the Vikings, as you guys know. He was willing to take a absolutely cut-rate one-year deal in order to you know, if they would allow him to be the QB1. And obviously the Vikings were not interested in that, in part because of this. They didn't really make Sam Darnold a serious offer either. And then, as you see here, they were more intent to save money on the QB2 role than to go out and use serious salary cap space on it. And JP, to your point, like, you're on day three there. You're Kwesi. They had the least draft picks in the NFL. They entered with four. The Vikings entered with by far the least draft equity out of the value picks. I thought it was really slick in that environment to turn the 142nd pick into, essentially, it was through two trades, but you traded 142 for Sam Howell, 201 and 202. And I just thought that was really slick. The upshot of it is you're going to save about $9 million on the QB2 this year, as opposed to the contracts people were giving out, right? Like the idea of a $10 million QB2. That $9 million is going to be put towards signing a starter at a different position, right? So, like, I thought that was really clever just in a vacuum. And then you still split the picks. You doubled them, so you were able to get up to five. So I thought that was well done.
Any other draft moves that really stood out to you?
The Travis Hunter trade, I thought was pretty crazy right from the top, Jacksonville moving up. And it turns out Andrew Berry, for a while there during the draft, I kind of evoked it to Sonny Weaver Jr. with draft day, where I had no idea what Andrew Berry was doing early. But then it kind of came full circle. And I actually thought the Browns had a hell of a draft once you get around to the end. They had that shocking thing at the beginning and the weird thing with drafting Gabriel over Sanders. They end up getting Sanders two rounds later in the fifth round. And then I thought Mason Graham was a solid pick at five. Now you have Jacksonville's first rounder next year as well. Of course, your own as well. So they got some stuff to work out with the quarterback room, but I thought that was interesting. And to me, that was a rare win-win draft trade because I thought Jacksonville did really well to get Travis Hunter as well.
Couple specific things. What did you think about the Giants going after Jackson Dart? What do you think about Jackson Dart as a pro?
You know, I think at that slot, the juice was worth the squeeze. There's one black box with his evaluation. If they can solve that, they're going to get a good quarterback, and that's, we don't know what his decision-making is like after the snap, right? I mean, that was the one thing he was inoculated from in Lane Kiffin's system, where you get a lot of the reads prior to – you have the decision made for you prior to the snap based on the defensive alignment and the numbers on each side. And a lot of times he was locked into that first read. And he'd make some trick shot throws, fitting it between three guys to bullet the ball in, generally to Trey Harris. But that's what that system was. You rarely saw his head snap to the other side of the field. It doesn't mean that he can't do it, right? It's just a black box. We know that he's going to run your system. Lane Kiffin would tell you that till he was blue in the face. And Dable likes quarterbacks who will run his system and stay on that script. So we know that at least those things fit. But what will it be when the bullets are flying after the snap and you have to make those decisions? We're going to have to find that out with Jackson Dart. But I thought it was a worthy dart throw, pun intended.
Yeah, I tend to also. What'd you think about Loveland over Warren? Loveland being the first tight end off the board ahead of Tyler Warren.
You know, I was pretty bullish that Warren was going to be the first tight end taken until roughly 48 hours before the draft when I was texting with one of Loveland's former coaches at Michigan. And that guy told me, Colson is the best player that I ever coached. And when I heard, and then I heard a star Big Ten player as well said privately that Colson Loveland was the best player he ever faced. And it was like, uh-oh. And obviously Colson Loveland ends up going there. They're different kinds of players. Colson Loveland is sort of a quasi-wide receiver. He's a stretched out wide receiver. You play him in the slot. You play him in the boundary. He can win at all three levels. He can run every single route for you. His hands are awesome. Very fluid. Whereas Tyler Warren is the berserker that you manufacture touches for him closer to the line of scrimmage and let him run the wildcat quarterback stuff. He was a dual threat quarterback, as you guys know, coming out of high school and Penn State transitioned him really, really quick. But you get some of the trick play utility with him. Great short yardage runner as well. So I didn't disagree with Chicago's decision. And I wish I'd had those conversations a little bit earlier in the process.
All good, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yo, Thor, we appreciate you always making time for us, dude. Thank you.
Always good talking to you guys. Thank you.
All right, man.
These phone lines remain lit up, but Brian, we got something important to do.
Well, right now, call number 9 to 1-800-636-1067. You win a pair of tickets to the game 5 for the 2025 playoff with the Washington Capitals versus the Montreal Canadiens. It's going to be Wednesday, April 30th. So right now, call number 9. Call in. And for more information, visit thefandc.com.